This morning is number 06-1950, the United States against Walls.
Good morning, Your Honor. You call the case as Walls versus Jovan Alexander?
I believe there's an also known as here. It is the case of the United States against Walls, also known as Alexander.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. I am Ann Salton. I am representing Cedric Walls, who also is known as Jovan Alexander. This is a case that arises from a young man who lived in Illinois, trip to La Crosse, Wisconsin. And while there, he allegedly engaged in dealing drugs. He was charged and he professed his innocence, asked that he have a jury trial. A jury trial was held, lasted approximately, as best I can tell from the records, probably 4 to 5 hours of actual testimony provided to the jury. There were no pretrial motions that were filed by his trial counsel. The opening statement made by trial counsel agreed in part with the statement that had been made by the prosecuting attorney. The examinations of witnesses that were presented by the prosecution all were very brief. And at the close of the prosecution's case, within a few seconds, the defense attorney stood up and said he had no witnesses, no evidence to present in defense of Mr. Walls. Mr. Walls then had appointed a counsel who filed an Anders brief in this court. I then subsequently was retained privately by Mr. Walls' mother to file the 2255 motion, in which Mr. Walls claims that he told his attorney he wanted to testify in his case and was denied the opportunity to do that. We then subsequently filed a request with the trial court for a certificate of appealability that was denied, and this court granted our request for a certificate of appealability on the single issue of whether or not Mr. Walls was denied his right to testify. As this court knows well, because its decision is so often cited by others around the country, a defendant's right to testify in his own behalf is personal to him, and a trial attorney does not have the right to waive that defendant's right to testify for him. A waiver of a right to testify must be both voluntary and knowingly. And in this case, it is a shame that we have a record that is silent on whether or not this young man waived his right to testify. Mr. Walls argues that he, in fact, had evidence that would have helped support the testimony that he, in fact, also would have offered, and that if he had been allowed to testify in his defense and present other evidence, then he would not have been given a 300-month sentence for what he argues is a wrong conviction because he was not engaged in drug dealing in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are some questions.
Thank you, Ms. Salter. We'll hear now from Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. Good morning again, Your Honors. I'm Robert Anderson. I represent the United States in this matter. There is no question that the defendant has a right to testify in a trial, but we all know they simply do not always testify in a trial. But the point of our being here today, the point of our presence on this appeal in the 2255, is the very purpose of a 2255 is to establish that you have sufficient grounds to merit a hearing or warrant relief for, from conviction or sentence. This court is firmly established, repeatedly repeats that established principle and precedent that unsupported, conclusory allegations are not enough to merit relief or even a hearing. That's what we have here. To succeed, Mr. Alexander or Mr. Walls must prove both the deficient performance of his counsel in this aspect and prejudice in that deficient performance. Mr. Alexander's petition did not offer credible and objective proof that his attorney failed to put him on the stand, despite his claimed unequivocal expression of a desire to testify. The only time that he's claimed that he expressed a desire to testify, the only time he's claimed this has been in this post-conviction collateral proceeding. And that, in an unspecific, somewhat cryptic affidavit, unsupported by any extrinsic evidence or documents or extrinsic testimony. He first refers to his belief that he was going to testify based on the fact that the United States filed a notice under 609 that we would use his prior convictions if he did testify, and that he conjured some belief that he was then going to testify. We can't compel him, of course, by filing a Rule 609 notice. That was just the mere prophylactic measure at the pretrial hearing of the court making sure that if he did testify, a jury instruction, appropriate jury instruction on that issue and the appropriate admissibility of the 609 evidence was addressed. It did not confirm that in some way he was going to be testifying. He then claims he believed that he was going to testify, that Attorney Ryan, his attorney at trial, was going to call him based on unspecified and uncorroborated conversations or statements he had with Attorney Ryan prior to trial. Now, though he claims he was surprised by Attorney Ryan resting the case and not calling him as a witness, he never indicated any protest at trial, didn't raise this to the attention of the court that he wanted to testify, didn't signal that there was any disagreement between he and his counsel, such that the district court might have inquired whether he was waiving his right to testify. And as this court has stated in precedent that I've cited in my brief, there's no obligation on the court's part when defense counsel rests and there's no conflict between defense counsel and the defendant. There's no obligation on the court's part to say, well, I want to make sure that you're waiving your right to counsel. It intrudes to some degree on the relationship between counsel and the defendant. If there were some substance to his allegation that he had told his attorney that he wanted to testify, he should have been able, at a minimum, to establish in more specifics, give more details of the discussions he had with his attorney, what was said, what was agreed to, when discussions took place, could have provided corroborating documents or perhaps witnesses. As an example, for instance, if there was some agreement, some understanding, and some plan by his recollection that he was going to testify, a defense attorney would have sat him down in advance of trial. They were going to trial. We did have the trial. Would have sat him down and gone through, well, okay, this is what your testimony would be. Prepare him for his testimony at trial. And the defense attorney certainly would have prepared him and gone over what's going to happen to you when you're cross-examined on the stand at trial and how to respond to cross-examination, which there was ample field for. A discussion of the possible testimony, what to expect. Especially, as I said, in this circumstance where Mr. Walls or Mr. Alexander had ample room for cross-examination and impeachment. If none of this happened, if there was no pretrial preparation for possibly testifying, then there simply, that's evidence there was no plan, no preparation, no plan that he was going to testify.
And drug convictions that you raised in your 609.
I'm sorry?
He had prior drug convictions that you would have raised.
Absolutely, and that's what he would have been confronted with had he taken the stand. The simplest thing of all for him to do in this petition for his 2255 would be to try to get an affidavit from his attorney as to what conversations they did have in preparation of the trial. But he wants this court to excuse the fact that he didn't even do that because he contends, he probably couldn't get an affidavit from his attorney. Well, that shouldn't be a way out of his burden of proof. Even if this case really squarely fits under the precedent of this court in Underwood versus Clark, where this court said it's simple enough after a person is convicted, after trial, to say, my lawyer wouldn't let me testify, so I'm entitled to a new trial, without any supporting any support behind that. So your holding in this case today should be the same. Bare bones, uncorroborated, self-serving assertion is insufficient to require a hearing or even relief on the merit. And even if he had supported it, it had come up with some support for the veracity of his allegations, he was not prejudiced by the failure to testify because of he would not just be able to take the stand and testify, well, I'm up here, Shannon, the guy who I co-conspired with, he lied, and the undercover officer who said that I met him in the parking lot and took him over to Shannon, he lied too. That's not admissible testimony. He could testify to facts, but even the facts that he claims in his affidavit that he would testify about, I was there at a party, are not inconsistent with and don't refute the testimony of the undercover officer, the testimony of Shannon Hughes, and the other witnesses about what he did with the money that was being counted up for the purchase of drugs, having gone to Chicago on previous occasions to get the supply.
When he was arrested, there were $13,000 in cash. He's also carrying $2,200.
It's carrying $2,200, and in a bucket a matter of feet away from him, there was $13,000 in cash, which witnesses had said they had seen him counting shortly before the police came in and executed the search warrant. And to take the stand and merely deny the allegations did nothing more than what the attorney did in his argument, to say, get up and say to the jury, you've heard what was presented, but that's insufficient evidence, and my client's entitled to the burden of entitled to the presumption of innocence. Government has the burden; that's not sufficient. They haven't proven it. Find him not guilty, and all the jury instructions that were submitted. And in fact, if he had testified, he would have been worse off, not only because the 609, his prior convictions, would have come out, but because of the 608B evidence that would have come out, very damaging. That. Why we're calling him by two names here today, Jovan Alexander and Cedric Walls. When he's arrested, he gives the police a false name. He's brought into the federal district court, charged. He's going through proceedings as Jovan Alexander, letting everyone believe all along that he's Jovan Alexander, gets to the precipice of being released on pretrial condition releases, until one of the pretrial service officers finds that his fingerprint matches Cedric Walls. So he's lied to the police, lied to the court, lied to pretrial services about who he is, lied to his own attorney about who he was. That all would have come out before the jury, affecting his credibility and impeaching him.
Is there any exposure to perjury if he had testified?
He could have potentially gotten the obstruction enhancement, he could have gotten an obstruction enhancement had he testified as well. But he wants you to believe that, in short, he offers a self-serving conclusion that his testimony would have affected the outcome of the trial in light of the balance of all this impeachment against him and the strength of the government's evidence, and this that is not sufficient proof to meet the prejudice prong of Strickland. So there's neither the performance prong showing or prejudice prong showing, and the judgment of the district court dismissing this petition should be affirmed, unless there are any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson.
6 minutes. If I may, I'd like to start by referring to the Underwood versus Clark case, because I think it helps to guide the way in which it makes sense to view this particular issue. In Underwood, this court recognized that a defendant is told to only speak through his lawyer when he comes into the court. He is told, don't speak unless we asked you to say something. So we cannot expect a criminal defendant to spring up from his seat and begin arguing what his rights are to a court. That just does not happen, particularly because we already know, and we do have good statistical evidence showing, that over 20% of everybody sitting in our prisons is mentally ill, seriously mentally ill. We have a system that requires that the rights of individuals be protected. One of the points that was raised by counsel is whether or not if Mr. Alexander had a defense on his behalf, would he been able to have raised doubt in the mind of at least one juror. And we believe that in the reply brief that we filed that we have identified a number of ways in which if he had had an opportunity to testify and present evidence on his behalf, that he would have been able to show that there was reasonable doubt as to whether or not he was engaged in criminal conduct. There were three men in the basement in a room that was 10 by 12 feet, I believe, and Mr. Alexander was 8 feet from the money. It was not his basement. He claims it was not his money. He claims he had $2,200 in his pocket. That was his money. It was not marked as drug buy money. And nobody even said that they saw him selling drugs. Rather, the person who said that he was selling drugs was Shannon Hughes. There is no evidence at all that Mr. Ryan had any conversations with Mr. Alexander about whether or not Mr. Alexander knowingly and voluntarily waived his right to testify. What we do know is that despite my request of Mr. Ryan to communicate with me, he did not do that. Mr. Alexander, or Mr. Walls, filed an affidavit saying that he told his attorney they had agreed that he wanted to testify, and he was not given that opportunity. And it is our belief that given the inability of Mr. Alexander to provide to the jury an explanation for why he was in La Crosse, that after Mr. Hughes got off the stand, there was no way that he was not going to be convicted, and therefore there was no way that he could have knowingly and intelligently waived his right to testify in his own behalf. He had a right to do that. And under the Rock versus Arkansas case that the United States Supreme Court issued many years ago, it reminds us how precious that right to testify on one's behalf is. We are at a stage in our nation where perhaps the lessons that are articulated in Rock versus Arkansas are more important than ever before. In Mr. Alexander's case, we cannot be certain that he received a fair trial, and he asked that this court give him an opportunity to have a fair trial. We cannot have confidence in the outcome of his trial. He had a right to testify in his own defense. That right was denied to him by his attorney, and he believes that it would have made a difference in the outcome of his case. We thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will go on to the next case.